Welcome. My name is Charles Gessert. I'm one of the five presenters, and our the person that's going to be providing our introductory remarks may join us in a moment. But in the meantime, we'll go ahead and get started. We have five presentations today. Each one takes about 15 minutes, and then there'll be time for questions and answers at the end. So at the conclusion of each remark, maybe what people could just do is if they need clarifying information, ask for it at that time, but not for comments and questions that will have ongoing discussion. I went over my talk earlier today and realized I had too many slides, so I'm going to skip some and be more extemporaneous. I'd like to, for the first two talks are on Clostridium difficile, and I'm going to imagine that a few of you are not very familiar with Clostridium, so I'm going to spend a little bit of time doing some very basics on Clostridium. First of all, it's in the field of it's in the family with Clostridium perfringens and Clostridium tetanae and other classes of bugs that have spore forms. And as a result, the cleansing of an environment for removal of the germ is, I would say, close to impossible, at least very, very difficult. Now, the guy that actually is first on my list, Tim Rubin, is a gastroenterologist, and he explains Clostridium to his patients all the time, and this is the analogy that he uses. He says that you imagine your lawn, and then some sort of, herbicide is put on your lawn, and it kills everything. You stand back and watch for a couple of weeks and see what happens. What's going to grow? What's going to grow? Weeds, right? So if you kill the weeds, you go around and kill the weeds, which is what we do with certain kinds of more specific antibiotics like vancomycin. Now you kill the weeds and stand back, what's going to happen over the next couple of weeks? More weeds. So if you take that same lawn that's been devastated and you plant a lot of grass seed and then let the grass seed germinate, what will we get? Well, you get a lawn, it'll have a few weeds, but most of the weeds will be suppressed by the lawn. And that's exactly what my presentation is about. It's about that sequence of events that occurs clinically. First of all, this is, I have no disclosures. First of all, this is an unusual area, and we've actually got an area of science, and so we've gotten an award. We were awarded one of the 10 worst jobs in science. The popular science had a diving in mucus thing, and we actually got the number one, just plain gross, award there. But, you can tell both the accuracy of their reporting and the accuracy of their science was revealed in their image that they had there, which was that you're actually going to be putting clean water into this guy's nose, which is not what we do. What they've got in the little image there is that, see, the water that fills your tank of your toilet is the same water that you use for cooking, and it's the same water that you use for washing your hands and drinking. It's tap water. It just goes into your tank, and then you flush the tank. So that's not actually the correct image. Clostridium, we're going to just, as I said, a little bit of basics, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about stool transplantation. I'm going to skip our case study, except just very briefly to mention that most cases arise after the routine use of antibiotics for routine illnesses. They may arise in outpatients or inpatients, and the basic ingredient you need to be susceptible to Clostridium is that you need to have your normal flora disrupted. These numbers are quite old, and there are many, many cases, half a million per year of outpatient cases at least, and 1 or 2% of all hospitalized patients end up with Clostridium. And these numbers are rising. I tried to get to current numbers and got frustrated, as you can see from my little note on the slide, because there were over 150 epidemiologic studies on Clostridium so far this year alone. And so I decided just to punt and say that it's a very rapidly rising, almost you could say, epidemic. People that have become ill are quite ill. They're not just ill from the overgrowth of the bacteria, as you are in many bacterial infections. They're ill from the toxins that are produced by the vegetative form of Clostridium. So in other words, the living form, the reproducing form of Clostridium also produces a series of toxins which make you feel ill. It's not just that you have gastrointestinal problems. You also are sensed poisoned, and you feel that you feel very sick. And this becomes relevant because of the lengths that people will go to try to find cures for their Clostridium. I think that other than the noting that it's spore-forming and producing the toxins will go on. There are many, many different species of these, and we think that there's some shifts. Actually, and our second speaker may touch on that, some shifts in the types of species that we're seeing more prominently. Dormant forms live on bedpans and floors and toilets for long periods of time. That's the spore form, and that's why it's so difficult to clean and so difficult to remove from the environment. And again, the basic way to control it is by having a healthy flora in your environment, which suppresses or competes effectively for nutrients with the Clostridium. Just thinking about spore forms, one of the reasons we're never going to get away from tetanus vaccinations is because tetanus resides in the soil in spore form, and you're essentially never going to cleanse your environment of tetanus. The cartoons are cute, but they don't actually help us learn much. This is from a clinical point of view, and the one on the left is actually a healthy colon. Your inside of your gut looks pink and healthy, and on the microscopic level, it's full of villi, which provide the absorptive surface. The one on the right is got little plaques with the overgrowth of a material, which is essentially due to the infection, and it's a much smoother surface. It doesn't have nearly the absorptive surface of a healthy colon. The overgrowth is caused by broad-spectrum antibiotics. The most commonly implicated antibiotic are the clindamycins, but broad-spectrum antibiotics, including penicillins, in the penicillin family, doxycycline can be implicated as well. Cephalosporins are also very widely implicated. Now, typically, if a person has Clostridium clinically, they'll be treated with metronidazole, which is Flagyl. It's cheap, it's pretty effective. In some clinical settings, people will give them vancomycin, which is very effective and very expensive. Interesting little nugget, so you have something to take home with you. The pill form of vancomycin costs perhaps $1,200 to $1,500 for a two-week course. However, the IV or injectable form of vancomycin, which is the identical drug, can be drawn up in a syringe and given to same doses. It costs about $40. So patients are given the pill form, which is very difficult to keep it stable, or I'm not sure what the difficulties are with it, but it's extremely expensive. Whereas the IV form, same drug, can be prepared by your pharmacy in such a way that people can actually take it at much less cost. When the people take the course, about 80% of people if one of us had an infection, received an antibiotic, and then 2 weeks later we were really sick with Clostridium, we got our stool tested and found out we had Clostridium, we would be given vancomycin or Flagyl by our clinician. And we would, about 80% of us, would get well. That would be it. We'd be done. And what actually that probably means is it probably means that the original antibiotic that we took didn't damage our normal flora enough to give the Clostridium a really thorough foothold. However, if your normal flora was essentially wiped out by the original antibiotic, then you might become a person who gets recurrences. In other words, once you take the antibiotic for the Clostridium, you're back where you started 2 weeks later, and you have recurrent Clostridium. Now, those of you who are paying attention will also have already touched upon the irony of the situation, that we are using antibiotics to treat a condition that was caused by antibiotics. And so you have an irony in the entire logic, if you will. Now, that irony has come to the consciousness of clinicians around the world from time to time over the last 20 years, and particularly for some reason in Scandinavia, Norway, Denmark, Sweden. They have different people, it's occurred to them, that maybe we're approaching this wrong, and maybe what the problem is not that you need another antibiotic. What you need is healthy poop. you need stool. You need a healthy stool from a donor. Now, this when it first began to occur to people, people tried to replace poop where they had gotten it from. And that is to say they were using colonoscopes and enemas and various kinds of ways to replace the poop. We're sufficiently far from breakfast that I can give you some of the details, but basically it's an unaesthetic approach because you have to have a large volume of stool and a certain amount of it doesn't successfully stay where you put it. And so you end up with both a odor and unpleasant environment, not just for the patient, but for the provider of care as well. And so some of the people around the world, particularly, again, the Scandinavians, have thought that maybe there would be another route, and maybe they should put the replacement poop into the top end of the GI tract rather than the bottom end. Now, there's some problems with that. Your body is well protected against the taking in of germs, and so therefore your acid in your stomach will kill virtually everything that you take in by mouth. And of course, if you take it in by mouth, you might have an odor and taste problem as well. So we've bypassed all of that. We fixed all of it. You'll be happy to know. And what we figured out is that first of all, the I'm going to go right ahead here to the preparation. What you do is you get a donor, usually a healthy family member, and you screen them for any kind of conditions that they might transmit, hepatitis in particular, and then get a stool sample. I'm going to go right on down here to, there's a stool, in case anybody wants to know what it looks like. We refer to it as the ultimate probiotic. For those of you that are from the CAM section, you'll be happy to know that we're using probiotics, or we're using alternative medicine. You prepare the stool. Actually, there's an endangered feces. A lot of jokes. These are all my colleague who prepared these. But anyway, you actually put it in a household blender, believe it or not, and use normal saline and mix it up in a household blender until it achieves a consistency that's a little bit like chocolate milk. Then you have to filter it because there's enough particulate matter in stool that it would have difficulty getting in through an NG tube, which is the next step. And so it's actually filtered, and what you do to filter it is you use a, let me see, do I have my filter here? Doesn't look like it. In any event, we have, let me go back a few. Nope. I must have deleted that slide, but we have a, we use a coffee filter. Commercial coffee filter, and we've been asked by some clinicians whether or not that clogs it up. And we say, no, you just have to be patient. Just put it in, go away and do something else, and drip drifts through. Now, if you stop and think about it, when you take a piece of stool, a bulk of stool, it's principally fibrous matter, which hasn't been well absorbed. The liquidy stuff that you've now suspended in normal saline that drips through is almost pure bacterial material, or it's, at least it's much more concentrated bacterial material. So that's the stuff you actually want. Is the stuff that drips through the coffee filter. Anyway, at that point, it's drawn up in a syringe, and the odor and taste and other kinds of aesthetic issues are completely gone. Those aesthetic issues were in the lab. They're not for the patient. In other words, the donor gave the stool in a usual stool cup. It goes to the lab, and they prepare it drawn up in a syringe. They take the patient up to the clinic, and they insert an NG tube. This is probably the most difficult part of the procedure as far as the patient is concerned, is getting the NG tube put in. Now, when I was in medical school back in when the earth was still cooling, we were required to have NG tubes put in each other. And there were two problems with that. One is we used NG tubes that were about the size and consistency of garden hoses, and the other is that we were amateurs. We didn't know how to do it. And so it was a very unpleasant experience. Now they use little, tiny, thin, very flexible, and I almost think it's cheating. But the main problem that people run into is some people have very strong gag reflex and can't really swallow it, so they're swallowing the G-tube. Then you take the picture, as you see on the right, to make sure that the tube is in the right place. They insert the stool and flush it with normal saline so it's clean and clear, remove the tube and send the patient on their way. Now, those of you, again, who are paying attention will say, well, aren't all the bacteria going to be killed in the stomach when you've sent them down there to all that stomach acid? Aha, good question. The night before you were given a proton pump inhibitor, and it enabled you to suppress acid. And so you, that day you're having very low acid. Anyway, to conclude the remarks today, I'd give you this. We've done about 75, well, we've done 89 of the transplants, but 14 didn't make it into our case series because of inadequate data. In other words, we only wanted to have everything exactly according to full data. Of the ones we did do the had full data on, we had 75. We had what we call a primary cure rate of 78.8%, and that means that people walked away essentially well. The ones that didn't get a cure, in other words, the other 21.3%, we found that many of them, almost all of them, responded then to a course of vancomycin because their stool had been partially returned to normal, if not wholly returned to normal. And therefore, they were ready, essentially, they were back in the situation of the person early on that we talked about who had had a course of antibiotics, but it had not completely wiped out their stool. So they were back in a position where they could more easily recover. And that is it. We've had very good success with it. It's not being done by us alone. It's being done by many centers around the world, few in the United States, but centers around the world. We get patients from all over Canada and the U.S. that are sent to us because people are desperate. They find out about us on the internet. We're not evangelical. And by the way, we don't make any money from the product that we use. Thank you.